The Kathleen Show, shaking things up and grabbing life by the ovaries. Here's your host, mom, wife, writer, filmmaker, entrepreneur, and overall, regular chick, Kathleen Slattery Moscow.
Welcome to the studio. This is the program where we shake things up and say hell no to the status quo. Hell no to the less than brilliant ways we've been living our lives and caring for our bodies. This is your second act, your chance to live big and bold with no regrets. And we're talking today about the almighty dollar. Does money serve you or enslave you? Let me ask it another way. What are you trading in order to get a paycheck each week? Obviously, you're trading your time, but you might even be trading your integrity if you're working for a company or doing something that you don't believe in. You might be trading your genius, settling for a job that pays the bills but does little or nothing to tap into your God-given talents or your desires. But the most important question of all is, is it worth it? Are the bills that you created and the things that you bought worth the fact that you have traded your life to pay for them? I'm going to share a personal story, another one that I'm not quite proud of, but will maybe strike a chord with you. I grew up with very little money, and I think that the word poor is abused in this country, but let me just say that there were food stamps involved and questionable living conditions and very few of the nice things in life that most of us take for granted. And I remember feeling a tremendous amount of shame about this. So when I got out of Dodge, graduated from college, and landed my first good-paying job, I went nuts. After years of needing and wanting, I bought everything in sight. Clothes, furniture, jewelry, dinners out, vacations. And when I didn't have the cash in hand, I didn't miss a beat. I just put it on my credit card because I made good money, and I could ultimately pay it off. And I deserved it, damn it. But suddenly, it didn't matter how much money I was making because I was spending more than came in and racking up credit card debt. And when those amounts started to feel uncomfortable, I took out consolidation loans and started the process all over. The bottom line is that I let a lot of money slip right through my fingers. And not only did this create a mess with my finances, it messed with my head and my confidence. But worse, it locked me into a job I hated for a very long time. My spending took away my freedom to choose. I couldn't leave because despite the fact that I was often making over six figures, I was living paycheck to paycheck, and if anything would have happened to my job or my health at that point, I would have been screwed. So here I was, once again, filled with a sense of shame surrounding money. But this time, it was entirely self-inflicted. By some fateful intervention, a book ended up in my hands, and I have no idea who gave it to me or how I heard about it, but what I do remember is how profoundly it changed my perspectives and the way that I handled money. The title of the book is Your Money or Your Life, and a revised edition has just been published. Coming up, I have the very neat author, someone who has been a living and breathing testament to financial independence her entire adult life, Miss Vicki Robinson. And don't forget to visit us during the break at thekathleenshow.com. Live and be young and free. You're the
only one.
Welcome back to the studio. You're listening to The Kathleen Show, and today we've been talking about money and whether you've allowed it to be a blessing or a curse in your life. My next guest's philosophy about money will rattle you, excite you, and change the way you look at, manage, and value both your finances and your life. Vicki Robin is the best-selling co-author of Your Money or Your Life. Vicki has lectured across the country about achieving financial independence, lowering consumption, and sustainable living. She has appeared on Oprah, Good Morning America, and in the Wall Street Journal, among many other media outlets. The New York Times has called her the prophet of consumption downsizers, and she was selected by Utney Magazine to be featured in their book, Visionaries, People and Ideas to Change your life. And on a personal note, Vicky is one of the heroes of my life. And when I read the original edition of Your Money or Your Life in the mid-1990s, it was the first time that I realized how much a book could impact your life. Vicky, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Vicky, an updated version of Your Money or Your Life has recently been released, and you originally co-wrote the book with Joe Dominguez. Can you tell us a little bit about Joe's story and how it led to his financial philosophy and ultimately the book?
Oh, what a great question. Joe grew up in Spanish Harlem to parents who were both immigrants and almost was the head of the household from the time he was 7. So he really had a lot of street smarts about money and the value of money. And then he was in schools in the ghetto, and somebody recognized his genius. He really was a genius. He was sent to one of the best high schools in New York City. So he was starting to take a look from going from the, you know, from the ghetto to the sons and daughters of the wealthiest people in New York. And he realized that rich or poor, people weren't really very happy in their relationship with money. And so money could not be the determining factor in a good life. And so it sent him on a quest to what is money and what makes people happy. He spent 10 years working on Wall Street, and not as a stock investor, but as a market advisor. He was one of the first people in technical analysis, and part of this was his quest to see what is money, what makes people happy, and what makes people miserable in relationship to money, and how can we design a life that's fulfilling and satisfying that isn't so focused on it. And he determined he wanted to be out of the money game, sort of like you go through your military service by the time he was 30, which he did only on a salary on Wall Street. And because what he did is he woke up to a simple fact, the simple fact that money per se doesn't make people happy. What makes people happy is having a purpose in their lives larger than themselves, having a sense of responsibility to the larger world, having a work that's fulfilling, and that, you know, that you design your money life so that you have enough coming in to support your larger life. And so that's what he did for himself. And after a while, in his mid-30s, I guess it was about his mid-30s, early 40s, people started asking him, what do you know about money that puts you so at peace and so free?
Because, let me just state, because at 30, he was financially independent. He was no longer,
exactly.
He was able to walk away from his job and he was financially independent.
Yes, and when people hear financially independent, they hear, you know, $1 million or, you know, $1 gazillion. And what he was able to do, his genius and really a key to the book, is he was able to determine, you know, numerically how much was enough for him to have a satisfying life, because he tracked that over years. He tracked purchase by purchase what purchases contributed to his satisfaction. So he was able to retire early on an income that most people would say is totally insufficient for a happy life. But for him, he had determined it was enough, and actually, till the day he died in 1997, it was enough for him. And many of the strategies in Your Money, Your Life are things that he woke up to. And of course, everybody does it their own way, but it's very interesting to read about somebody who was that radical in his examination of how much is enough.
And so you were saying in the mid-30s, or when he was in his mid-30s, people were starting to come to him asking him, how are you doing this? And how are you at peace? And he was able to kind of put this all into a form.
He put it together, and he put it into a form, and it's now a 9-step program. And it really wasn't something that he invented so that he could write a best-selling book or something like that. It wasn't at all that. It was simply him trying to think, well, okay, what did I do? Well, the first thing I did was this, and then I did this, and then I did this. In explaining it, people started bringing their friends. You know, would you talk to my daughter? Would you talk to my mom?
Would you talk to my mom?
Exactly. And so I was working with Joe at that time, and I helped him develop the seminar.
And how did you originally meet Joe?
I was young, and I had started climbing up the ladder of success in New York City in my chosen field, which was film and television and theater. And yet I looked ahead, and I saw the people who were successful were not very happy. And so I started on my own quest for, like, okay, I know I can climb this ladder, and I can get up it. I've done it before. You know, I was top of my class in high school and in college. But I think there's something else to life. So I was on my own quest for finding what that was. I did a variety of really interesting things, and someplace in the course of that, I bumped into Joe, and I had, you know, accumulated enough savings from my career in New York And he was able to say, well, you know, you could invest that money and live on the interest income. You could put it in treasury bonds. At that point, I was able to get 9% interest, which we can't get right now. And then you can live on the interest income and you could continue this quest. So I did that. And then later when he was starting to be in demand and he didn't have much interest in, you know, making a new profession for himself, you know, he got financially independent. But I was passionate about what he was teaching because I knew it could make a difference for tons of people. And I wanted to produce an events that he would speak at so that he could teach people. So I was the one who helped him get this word out into the world. And eventually, after doing live seminars that 400 people at a WAC would show up to and then making it into a tape course, eventually we were approached to write a book. And I'm a writer and communicator, and so I said, well, sure, I'll do this with you. And I actually ended up writing most of the book. And at the end of that process, he asked me if I would be, you know, the co-author, be the person who would go out in the world and promote it, which I was happy to do. It was my skill set, and he was really happy to stay home. He was more of an introvert. So I did that, and now 17 years later, I did an update of the book, and like him, I found somebody who was passionate about building this out and finding the next million people who might be interested, my new co-author, Monique Tilford. And so I brought her on board, and she's now working to create an organization that will support people in actually doing the program. So if you want the history, that's how this all evolved. And when we published the book, a community of people, we had like 50 people in a speakers bureau, a community of people grew up like me, who had, you know, for whom this program had changed their lives and who wanted other people. It was sort of, you know, a natural network that formed who wanted to be educators. And so we built out a whole organization of people who were being educators and people who would speak to the media. And it was a little cottage industry there of promoting this approach to money.
And again, I just want to remind everyone, the name of the book is Your Money or Your Life. And there are a lot of books out there that talk about budgeting and getting rich and saving strategies. And although Your Money or Your Life certainly provides a lot of concrete suggestions, you know, for me, the biggest difference about this book is how it approaches the philosophy of money in our lives, how we personally view and feel about money, and how that ends up playing out in our daily decisions, you know, to spend or save or to earn. And it was this philosophical shift that, you know, has made the biggest difference yet in my personal finances. So because of that, I'm going to say three terms or phrases that you use in the book, and I'd like you to tell us what they mean. The first one is money equals life energy.
Right. Okay, so money equals life energy is when we think about money, and now if you think of paper and metal and you think about credit cards and you think about mortgages and you think about all these transactional things, and you most often you think about not having enough. and so that is one level of money in our lives. But what we say is that we have a money personality. We have an emotional relationship with money, and that influences our daily transactions. We could love money or hate it. It can be an affluence and abundance, or it's a tool of the devil, or, you know, you have all these thoughts about money, and that really drives how you earn it and spend it and save it, and your level of debt, for sure. And then there's cultural views of money, and this is really where we sort of puncture this basic notion in our culture of more is better. If you have one, two is better. If you have two, three is better. And then you sort of, you have an endless number of skirts in your closet, shoes, tools in your, whatever it is that you enjoy buying, you just say, well, okay, I have this, but I'd like something better. You know, more, I want more, I want something different, I have a pink one, but I need a blue one, or I want something better. You know, everybody's always upgrading their technology. So this is this more, better, or different stuff. And, you know, really who it serves is the corporations who are trying to sell us products, really.
Right.
So going out from that, we say, well, okay, these are all ideas about money, and they were sort of human-constructed, but what would be like a really honest, real, persistent definition of money? And actually, when you take a look at it, if you were a Martian, you know, sort of assigned to like find out what life on Earth was about, you would make an observation that people invest their time in something called work to get something called money. So basically, money must be something that people, for whatever reason, choose to trade their life energy for.
You're trading your life for your money. That's the bottom
line. You're buying the money in your wallet with the hours of your life. Now, money could seem like something infinite, like I spend it all and I can earn more, or I can just always put it on my credit card. But your life is limited. And once you can define something in terms of a limited resource, you then have a values-based relationship with it. When you have your values, you have things, your dreams, your desires, your purpose, everything has to fit into your 70 or 80 short years, a third of which you'll spend sleeping. So, you know, it's like, it's not that much time that you have here on this earth to be everything you want to be. And so you better preserve, use your life energy to forward your fulfillment and your goals. And that's what the shift is in your money, your life, is once you realize that, then when you whip out $5 for a coffee, it's not like, I deserve the coffee, it's a hard day, or I always get coffee here, or my friends come here, or it's not. It's like, okay, that represents a half an hour of my life. Is it worth it?
You know, one of the quotes surrounding this in the book is, debt is one of our main shackles. Our levels of debt and our lack of savings makes the 9-to-5 routine mandatory. And so for all of us out there, you know, at times in our life when we're working jobs we don't like or that, you know, suck our souls dry, it's so important to kind of put two and two together. We have to work those jobs to pay for this stuff, you know. And when I first read the book and I was going through my closet one day and I was bagging up stuff to go to Goodwill, half of which I had never worn, some of which I'm embarrassed to say still had the tags on. I had like 4 big garbage bags. And I'm looking at it and I started doing the math in my head. How many hours of my life am I just taking out the door right now? And it burns you up inside. You can feel it rise up in your face, but it also in a good way, I mean, that's the negative side of it. The good thing is it spurs you to make better decisions the next time you're standing in front of that beautiful shirt.
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
Exactly. Yes. That's the transformation that happens when people do this program.
And that's why, and that's why this book is so important and so different. Again, it's called Your Money or Your Life, and it is no ordinary money book. Okay, let's get to the next phrase. Or I shouldn't say phrase, I should say term. Enough.
Mm-hmm.
Enough.
Right.
What does this word mean within the context of the book, and why is it such an important concept?
Oh, that's a great question, because enough is really a question in any energy flow. In this book, we're looking at money. We're saying, okay, how much is enough money and stuff to make me happy? So the goal is happiness or fulfillment or satisfaction or contentment or pleasure or inspiration, whatever it is, you know, whatever you say, that would be the peak of fulfillment for me. Then you say, okay, what set of things contribute to that? And so if you observe, there are certain things that contribute to your basic survival, food, you know, housing, clothing, etc. And then there's things that are comforts, you know, they make life better and they really help you go, you know, having a nice couch. And then there's things that are even luxuries, you know, things that are just so wonderful, you know, like buying something when you're traveling or something like that. But every single thing contributes to your satisfaction and fulfillment, but you become habituated in this process to spending money to get happy. And so you get embedded. If I spend money, I'll be happy. If I spend money, I'll be happy. If I spend money, I'll be happy. Then you start to think, I'm not happy. I need to spend more money. And you take yourself beyond the point of enough into the point of too much. But you don't notice it because you keep thinking, oh, maybe I should buy something different. So this enough point is the peak of satisfaction and contentment in anything, you know, in terms of money and stuff. Enough money might be, you know, I need an income of, you know, $35,000 a year. I could have more, it might be better, but you know what? I don't want to devote myself to a job I don't like in order to have more money. So you establish an enough point in terms of your income. You establish an enough point in terms of your expenses. You know, when I spend like $100 a month on clothing, everything I like. But when I get to be a clothing habit, you know, and I'm spending $300, which could be 60 hours of my life on clothes, that's too much. So in everything, you start to find this Goldilocks place of not too hot, not too cold, just right. And this could be enough, actually, in this book is about money and stuff, but it could be about time. You know, how much is enough time kicking back and drinking a beer? How much is enough time working? We don't really feel like we have a control over the enoughness in our lives, and we are just pulled into too much. And when we're pulled into the too muchness of life, we end up with, you know, close the tags on them that you take to the thrift store.
Because
you have too many, you know, you have too many. So it's really, it's redirecting people from the more is better mentality to how much is enough for me and how could I pursue that in every aspect of my life.
We're going to take a super quick break, but I'll be right back with Vicki Robin, the author of Your Money or
Don't
Your Life.
So
I'll be right back.
Surprised to see me. You never wanted much. It's so fun and nice to be here. Oh, how you do and such. I'm better now since I hit the ground. I was spinning.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Slattery Moskow, and I'm continuing my conversation with Vicki Robin, the author of Your Money or Your Life, 9 Steps to Transforming Your Relationship with Money and Achieving Financial Independence. Yes, we're talking about the fact that money does not have to mean more stress or more work or more stuff, but it can mean more freedom and more living and more joy if we look at it and manage it differently. You know, Vicki, we were just kind of finishing up the conversation on enough and that concept of what's enough. And I think everybody out there who's listening knows that point, you knows somewhere along the lines when they cross that point from enough to too much, because you start to feel buried by your clutter and your stuff. You start to feel kind of sick to your stomach every time you go to the store and buy 5 of something versus 1. It's this little nagging persistence that we all can't always put a finger on, but I think on some level, consciously or unconsciously, we know it's there. And so it's so nice when you can get back to living with what is enough, because you know you're not depleting your life energy and you're not doing things that are going to potentially harm the earth, which we'll get to in a minute. But I just wanted to kind of do that check-in with the audience, because I think we've all felt it on some level, and sometimes it's just this nagging feeling.
Yeah, it's a nagging feeling, and when we're inducted into a more is better, you know, if I spend money, I will be happy way of thinking, then, you know, when you have that sort of sickening feeling like, oh, geez, I just bought another pair of shoes. Look at this. I have 3 pairs of black shoes in my closet. I don't need these. But then you might think, I need to hire a clutter coach. That's what I need to do. You know?
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah, so because I need to get a handle on that. Well, the clutter coach gets to, you know, like nice and tidy, and then as soon as you stop paying that person $60 to $80 an hour, you're back to your old habits. And you think, well, okay, fine. Maybe it's that...
Or you add an addition onto the house to, you know,
oh, yeah,
house all this stuff.
Oh, exactly.
Or a storage
facility.
I need
to get rid of this stuff. I'll put it into a storage unit, you know? I mean, you know, just have your stuff like hanging out. So you keep thinking, I need to do something different about this. So you think, oh, I maybe it's an addiction. I need to, like, yeah, I'll go to therapy and get my addiction handled. Or, you know, if you keep thinking that there's a material solution to material excess, you know, that there's another thing you could spend money on that was going to get you out of this cycle, you're still in the cycle. Really, it's learning that not all your needs are mediated or filled by money. Some of your needs are filled by friendship, you know, and you're not going to go out and buy friends.
Time to be with your friends and time to chill if you feel like
exactly.
It, or time to be creative and listen to your heart. And, you know, it's interesting because as we're seeing right now with the whole financial fallout, it goes beyond just being an uncomfortable feeling. It's leading to bankruptcy and people losing their homes and decisions, you know, and again, I'm right there with a lot of people. I mean, I've made such bad decisions financially throughout my life, but things like this book and your kind of work has helped keep me on track. But there is a very practical downside to it as well. It's not just about the feeling. It's about the practicality that we can't sustain that kind of buying anymore on a very personal level. We're already up against the clock for another break, but I will be right back with Vicki Robin. And during the break, check out her book at yourmoneyoryourlife.info. I'll be right back.
There was something in the air.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Kathleen Show, and I'm continuing my conversation with Vicki Robin, the best-selling author of Your Money or Your Life. But remember, this interview will also be available for online listening at thekathleenshow.com, and you can send the link to family and friends around the globe and help them get their finances on track, too. Or you can register for the podcast and never miss a guest like Vicki again. And it's free, which will fit beautifully into your new journey toward financial independence. Vicki, the final phrase that's in the book that I'd love to have you explain is financial independence.
What does
or should financial independence mean to each of us as individuals?
Well, ultimately, I mean, the idea of financial independence, the one we normally have in our heads, is that you're set for life. You have enough money coming in from sources other than how you spend your time so that you can have a life you love and not have to actually work for money. So that's the idea of financial independence. And we base it on this enough point rather than on an infinite, you know, people think, oh, it's a million or gazillion dollars. So it's defining how much is enough for you and having that enough for life. But for me, actually, the biggest step, and it's what you've been talking about, is unhooking yourself from the consumer culture, from identifying your well-being according to what advertising or, you know, the Joneses or other people say is the good life. You know, like you were watching TV and you know, we don't even have cars with drivers anymore. We just have cars that drive themselves, you know, through canyonlands. And you think, oh, my God, that's what I want. You didn't want it before you saw the ad, but then you see the ad and you want it. So if you can unhook your mind so that you develop an internal yardstick for fulfillment, not like what your neighbor has, but what really you observe makes you happy, that is independence from the what generates overconsumption and overspending and overdebting, et cetera. And so that's the first level. Second level is getting yourself out of debt. If you have debt in times like these, it's very precarious because, you know, you could lose the car or the house. You could lose things. I mean, people are going into foreclosure now. Debt is, I mean, mortgage debt perhaps is like one of the most, you know, common forms of debt, and it's a useful form of debt. But, you know, credit card debt, just get clear of the decks of that. And then if, you know, no matter what the economy does, you have a certain stability. Get, you know, having savings. All financial planners will tell you, you should have, you know, 2 to 6 months of savings in the bank, in liquid assets, that you could mobilize for times like these. So if you lose your job, it's not like an instant tragedy. It's a time when you have some savings so that you can think about what the next thing is. Two other pieces I want to talk about financial independence, which really means how dependent am I on the money economy to meet my needs? And so being able to do some things for yourself, whether it's cooking from scratch or changing your own oil or whatever, I mean, it's people hire people to do so many things for them that they could actually do themselves. They're quite simple, changing a gasket in your faucet. So the more competent you feel in relationship to the material world that is yours, the more independent you are of the economy. I had a friend who was in Fiji, and people held her in such high regard because they presumed, since they knew how to fix everything in their world, that she knew how to fix her computer and her cell phone. They just thought she must be brilliant because she could do all these things. The more we can do for ourselves, the freer we are. And the other thing is community, is that if you are in a community, whether it's your family, whether it's your neighborhood or you know, the people at work, if you're in a community where people share resources, you have to buy less. So you're more financially independent. So our financial independence is putting together a set of capacities and conditions, you know, like being out of debt, having some savings, having friends, having skills, you know, and having owning our own minds. And then we can move through the economy with a much easier way to get enough for yourself. So that's financial independence.
Well, and I think it's interesting, too, as you read through the book, again, the book is called Your Money or Your Life. You know, this doesn't just affect us. It ends up being a big factor for the planet. And I know you're passionate about that. It's a huge part of your work and your entire body of work. And can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, when you recognize that everything you buy is a little piece of the planet, you know, you buy a pen, anything from a pen to canoe to a car to, you know, a new roof for your house. All these things that you buy have, you know, material that came from the body of the earth in them. And the way the consumer culture is that the faster you can get that stuff out of the earth through your life and into the dump, the better the economy is doing. I mean, gross national product is the rapidity with which the planet is turned into garbage, which is sort of a horrible thing to think about. So, but it's true. So every dollar in your wallet is actually a loan. It represents your right to consume resources that are limited. And the thing that we don't really understand, and because we can't feel it, we can't see it, is that we live on one planet, and it has a limited amount of stuff that can be transformed into products to serve our lives. And we are way into ecological debt right now. We are using up. It's like we have a house, and it's cold winter, and we run out of wood, and we're pulling up the floorboards and the siding off to put in the wood stove to stay warm, but we won't have a house next year. So conscious consumption is also the ability to find that enough point so that you're not using more than your fair share.
This is The Kathleen Show. I'll be right back with Vicki Robin, the author of Your Money or Your Life. We're heading into the final stretch. I'm Kathleen Slattery Moscow, and I'm winding down my conversation with Vicki Robin, the best-selling author of Your Money or Your Life. I can't say the name of the book enough because I want you to go get it. It will change you. Okay, Vicki, I want to quickly wrap up that part of the conversation. We were just talking about, you know, obviously consumption and the earth and sustainability, because every time I take my trash out every week, you know, you're bagging it up, my stomach flips. And I try to imagine where it's going and where it's going to sit and how in the heck. I mean, again, I love that part of your work, and a big part of your work is making us conscious, not only on an individual basis, but it's thinking about what, you know, if we can be wiser with our money, we will be wiser with the earth. And that's why, to some extent, even with this economic downturn, somewhat the blessing is that, you know, we're not buying as much, and not as much as landing in a landfill. And there is a silver lining even within this economic downturn that's making us all.
Yeah, totally. And I just want to say that a mantra in the book that we have, you know, a phrase we suggest that you use every time you have this sort of horrible feeling in your stomach, you know, this feeling of shame or frustration or just overwhelm in relationship to what's happening in your money life, we say no shame, no blame. You know, it all seemed like a good idea at the time. All this stuff you got in your closet seemed like a good idea. It's not that you were wrong. It's just that you weren't aware. And so once you become aware, you become powerful, and you can do something different if you choose.
Right. And I love that, because it takes this what is could be a very negative funk to fall into, and really it's about the positive changes that can come out of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so you become, I find that creativity arises, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. Creativity arises in the presence of insoluble problems. For me, at least, you know, then I go like, I don't know what to do about this. Now, let me see. I could do some research. I could figure out, can I meet my needs differently? You know, what was this blouse about? Well, the blouse was about a little R&R over the weekend. Can I do a different R&R over the weekend? You start to say, can I meet my needs differently, such that when I take out the garbage or I open my closet, I have a happy feeling.
Right.
A satisfied feeling. I have a enoughness feeling. You know, like everything here is making my life better, really, truly.
On your personal website, VickiRobin.com, you have a piece that you wrote called Liberating Limits. And I could spend an entire interview just on that, because so much of what you wrote there falls under the themes of this show. But 7 years after Joe Dominguez died of cancer, you were diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. And you write in this piece, because I was trying to run fast enough to stop a runaway train, I ended up in personal overdrive, every bit as insatiable in my mission as the consumer frenzy we debunked in Your Money or Your Life. I didn't know how much was enough. I slept too little, worked too hard, traveled too much, and spread myself too thin. For love, not money, but still beyond my personal limits. And you go on to say, I saw a great irony that my unstoppable drive to put this roadmap in the hands of millions nearly cost me my life. What are the biggest lessons that came out of your cancer diagnosis, and how are you doing now?
Well, out of the diagnosis, I think the biggest lesson was that there is no such thing as a cancer victim, that there's only people who have a cancer diagnosis who are living their lives according to their personality, their values, et cetera. So the diagnosis actually was quite empowering, because I always wondered, how would I feel if somebody told me I was going to die in 6 months? Well, I got close to that sentence, and what I found was that it was very mobilizing, and it had me confront. When you hit a wall, it allows you to confront behavior that's invisible to you otherwise. It's just how you are. So it allowed me to see this desperation to save the planet that was embedded in me. And then I kept looking, where is that desperation coming from? And so I really went onto an inner journey. And you see this with a lot of people with cancer. They, you know, they get rid of the husband or the house, or that, you know, they go on the road, they buy themselves a motorcycle, they take yoga, they do all sorts of things that they always wanted to do. But there was always some infinite future. When you know that your future is limited, which it is, frankly, then you start to make these important choices for what really is my life about. And I realized that my life is not so much about changing other people. My life is really about staying present, living in a balanced way, you know, having all parts of myself have a voice in what this one body chooses to do. It's about having a personal life as well as a professional life. So the change was really, I think it went from sort of tragedy, like there's a horrible thing happening, we can't stop it, to a comedy, which is we're all bumbling along, myself included, and we're doing the best we can, and somehow or another, all's well that ends well, because somehow or another, we're all going to make it, and it's not going to be because we worked too hard. It's because we loved each other more.
Well, I loved the piece. I'm going to put a link to it up on our site. Vicki, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and for your entire life's work.
Thank you so much. I feel seen by you. I don't feel like we're doing an interview. We're doing a conversation between people who really see one another, and that is very happy making.
Thank you, Vicki. That was Vicki Robin, the author of Your Money or Your Life. You can find out more at yourmoneyoryourlife.info or link to Vicki through us at thekathleenshow.com. This will radically change your life. When we come back, it's time for a smoking hot pick of the week, and in the spirit of today's show, one that won't cost you a darned penny. We'll be right back. Hello, this is Kathleen. It's been so much fun to pull some of these beautiful interviews from our archives. In total, we've selected 50 past interviews to re-release, and we will be recording and posting new episodes as well each week. You can help us out a ton by subscribing to the podcast, and if it's on your heart, please also leave a review and share the episodes you love with everyone you know. And finally, if you are interested in the yoga and meditation aspects of my work, those are the aspects that are instrumental to who I am as a person. If you are interested in yoga and meditation, please check out my online video series, Yoga for Beginners, where I teach you the fundamentals of several key poses in yoga. You will learn step by step what to do and what not to do in each pose, and you will walk away feeling capable about your ability to do yoga. And you are always welcome to come to Madison, Wisconsin and spend some time doing yoga at my studio, which is called The Studio. We offer a full array of daily classes as well as yoga teacher training. The studio really is a breathtaking and life-changing sort of place. Come visit us anytime. Thanks, everyone.